Welcome to the AP Now podcast, the podcast that covers trends, insights, and emerging issues impacting every accounts payable function. Your host, Mary Schaefer, is the founder of AP Now, a B2B digital information and learning company focused on all issues related to AP. Stay tuned as Mary and her guests discuss the business intelligence you need to ensure a cost-effective, technologically efficient, fraud-resistant, regulatory-compliant accounts payable function. Without further ado, let's dive right in.
Welcome to the 10th episode of the AP Now podcast. I'm your host, Mary Schaefer, and today I'm going to talk about authorized push payment fraud. Today's show is brought to you by Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. Now, we've got a little bit of material to cover today. I'm going to start with, yes, another new fraud. I'm going to explain how it works. And then I'm going to talk about some legislation that has been passed in the UK. But I want to make this real clear. It has not been passed in the US, nor do I expect it to be. And then we're going to move on from that. And I'm going to give you a real life example of how this fraud worked. And then we're going to conclude at the end with some takeaways or some, as I like to call them, lessons learned. One of the main purposes for this podcast, aside from, you know, sharing this information with you, is to once again demonstrate just how smart crooks are and how they understand how banking works and social media, et cetera, and they know how to take advantage of the different loopholes and how, you know, we have to be smart also, and we have to learn to recognize when they're doing these things. Now, you can see here we're talking about authorized push payment fraud. We see this term more in the UK than we actually do in the US, although we have our own versions of it. And of course, when you talk about it in the UK, you spell authorized with an S, not like a Z like we do here in the US. But be that as it may, whichever it is, no big deal. So what we're talking about when we talk about authorized push payment fraud, which by the way, you'll sometimes see abbreviated as APP, are those instances where the customer is tricked into authorizing a payment to an account that they believe is legitimate and a payee that they believe is legitimate. And of course, the account is usually controlled by the fraudster. And we use the term push because the payor is actually pushing out the payment. Nothing is being done by the payee. And that's part of the reason that makes recovery for this type of fraud so difficult. It's because the person who's being defrauded actually initiates the payment themselves. So some examples, and this first one is one, again, that we see more in the UK than we do in the US, but not to say it could not happen this way in the US, and it involves the crook impersonating somebody that the victim, if you will, is doing business with. So it might be in the case where someone's buying a home, it might be their solicitor, or their attorney, as we'd say in this country, or a builder, or somebody else that the person was expecting to pay. And usually this involves, this happens either because the email has been hacked or somehow, and as you'll see in the example, the crook, the fraudster, has come upon some information that makes it look like, helps them impersonate the payee. Some other examples, someone selling non-existent goods online, or our example, con artists who use social media and other information to gather information about the victim and then defraud them. And when you see how this was done in this one particular example, it'll make your head spin. And then the big fraud that we all have going on, both in the United States, it's a big issue, but also it's going on in the UK as well, this please change my bank account email that hopefully none of you are falling for. Okay, so that is what we mean by authorized push payment fraud. Now, the UK has just, I guess by the time you're listening to this, it'll be a week or two old, passed some legislation. Participation, by the way, in this legislation is voluntary. So not all the banks are, but at least four big banks have signed on, at least at the point where I was preparing this information. But what this legislation says is that anyone who is a customer of a signatory firm will have their money fully refunded, and this is the biggie, as long as they meet standards that are expected of them. I have not been able to get my hands on those standards, but as soon as I do, we'll do another podcast on it and I'll share them with you, because I suspect those standards would be good for anybody in learning how to protect themselves. So anyway, if you're a customer of one of the banks that has signed on and you're in the UK, there is some opportunities, if you will, for recall. Okay, now before we go on to our example, let's have a word from our sponsor. AP professionals know invoices are easy to lose and it takes time to track down approvers while also having to code, log, cross-reference, verify, reconcile, and cut checks, all while trying to stay compliant and get your bills paid on time. Stamply simplifies all of that. When invoices are entered in the system, Stamply's AI called Billy the Bot immediately gets to work by proposing GL codes, approvers, and flagging issues like PO mismatches and potential duplicates. AP simply confirms the information is correct and submits the invoice for approval. Here's the best part. Stamply fixes the disconnected communications between approvers, accounts payable, and vendors. With Stamply, conversations are centered around each invoice, and anyone can be invited to the conversation, getting to an approval decision up to 5 times faster. For more information, visit stamply.com/APnow. See for yourself how your team can work smarter, not harder. That's stamply.com/APnow. All right, and back now to our conversation. So going back now, we're going to start with our example. And this happened in the UK, but unfortunately, it pains me to tell you this, that this could have happened just as easily in the US or probably any other country. So in this particular case, the bank put a survey online on Twitter trying to gauge customer service. And they had a customer who was an existing customer, actually, and was trying to open a second bank account and was having problems. So this customer responded on Twitter, not giving any information about himself other than, you know, what was on with his Twitter handle, and certainly not giving any bank account information, just saying, yes, they were having difficulty. They've been trying for 2 weeks to get this bank account set up. Okay, seems innocent enough, an innocent enough response, and you know yourself the frustration that you sometimes have when you can't get something taken care of. So, okay, the customer responded on Twitter and got a call pretty shortly after that tweet went out from the bank apologizing for what had happened and offering to help. And that seemed like a pretty good deal. So when the call came in from the bank, or supposedly from the bank, the caller immediately went through the same protocols that banks typically go through. And they ask, all the security questions that they typically do. They were able to call because they simply looked the company number up on the website. And with that, so it looked like they had this information and they were calling. Asked the security questions, never asked for the password, but did ask for 2 letters in the password. In this particular case, what the crook did is they had to hang up, supposedly to look up some information, call back, and every time they called back, they went through the protocol of asking the various security questions. The only difference was that each time they asked the question, they asked for 2 different letters in the password. So the first time they asked for the 2 first letters, the second time they asked for the 2 last letters, you get the idea. Now, how could this work? Well, most of us use passwords that are 8 characters in length because, that's the minimum that is usually required. So in your back of your mind, think about all the passwords that you have with 8 letters in them, and you might want to think about making them longer. And then when the crook had collected enough information, supposedly to set up this new account, what they did is they'd gotten all the information they needed about the existing account that that customer had at that bank, and they were able to wire money out. How did they get away with this? Well, they collected information from various, you know, from the website, from the internet, from tweets, from their conversations back and forth. And when they called in, they were able to spoof their phone number so it looked like it was coming from the bank. So just like some folks will spoof emails, email addresses, they were able to spoof the phone number. And so it never occurred to the person who was talking to them that they were talking to somebody who was not a legitimate representative of the bank. But actually, what this person did, got on social media, a little research here, looked at the website, asked a few questions, never got all the information in one phone call, but eventually had all the information that they needed to get the money out of the old account. Okay, several hours after the money was moved, the bank called. The bank realized something was off, and they were able to get some of it back, not all of it. Now, if that bank was one of the four or more who signed on to this new legislation, because this did take place in the UK, they would have been able to get that money back, again, assuming they met the standards. So, you know, this happened to somebody else. Whenever something bad happens, whether it happens to me, by the way, or to anyone else, I always look at it and say, what can I learn from this? What steps can I take to make sure either this doesn't happen again, which is usually the way in my life anyway, or this doesn't happen to me. So here's what I see as the lessons learned. Number one, realize that crooks will collect information from a variety of sources, so they won't get everything all from one place. So what this means is we need to be very careful about what we put out there on a variety of mediums. Now, for us personally, for example, we probably all have a LinkedIn profile. Be careful what you put on there. To say, well, I'm not going to have a LinkedIn profile and that way, you know, nobody will ever find me is kind of burying your head in the sand. So it's not, you know, it's not a good approach. It's not the approach we really need to be taking. But we need to be careful what we put on there. Don't put on there, you know, I make payments for my company. The next thing is we need to be suspicious. Now, I hate to tell you this, but this is the world we live in today, we need to be suspicious of everyone and everything. And just because somebody looks legitimate, you know, do a little extra checking. Now, you know, I know sometimes, at least I can speak for myself, I get carried away with this. Several months ago, my daughter, who lives several thousand miles away from me, was robbed. She had her purse taken, you know, all her credit cards gone, all the cash was gone, her phone, even her phone was gone. She was calling me on someone else's phone. So I said, go over to the Apple store, get a new phone, and when you're there, call me, and I'll give you my credit card number. You can put the item on my phone. So she went over to the Apple store. She did this. No sooner was I on the phone with her, I wasn't even off the phone, when they put in the credit card, and the credit card company was calling me to verify that it was a legitimate transaction. So by this point, I'm so suspicious of everybody, I didn't want to give them the information that they needed, which eventually I did. And I realized, okay, it's Sunday morning. How in God's name would anybody know that an Apple store, you know, 2,000 miles away would be calling for this? But so you don't have to be as paranoid as I was that time. My daughter's on the phone yelling, Ma, just give them the information. But we do need to be a little bit more suspicious and a little less trusting. And, you know, it pains me to tell you that, but that's the world we live in today. And our jobs are to protect our organization. All right. I wish I could come, you know, with better news, but that's the story I have to share on this week's podcast. I'd like to thank you for listening to the AP Now podcast. And I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation, for making it possible for us to bring you this information. If you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate the episode, review the episode, subscribe to the series, like it, or even better, share it with your community on LinkedIn, Facebook, or your staff. To be alerted to new episodes, please visit www.ap-now.com and sign up for our free twice-a-week e-zine. You can use the box on the website to the left or the pop-up window that should appear after a few seconds. Thanks for listening this week. We hope to see you again on a future episode.